Do you put everyone on a probiotic, and do you believe everyone should be on a probiotic? What's your approach to that as a common supplement?
Oh, I love this question so much because I have two different answers because I honestly.
Not to confuse everybody.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As a naturopathic doctor and anthropologist, I optimize the health and performance of entrepreneurs and go-getters. Your business, body, balance, and inner badass, these are the themes we are exploring.
Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there.
It is a pleasure to introduce you today to an accomplished naturopathic doctor and someone who is at the forefront of her field, talking about something we're all curious about, but never really want to reveal amongst our group of friends. And that is optimal digestive health. Dr. Anita Davis in particular has been focusing in her practice on the diagnosis and treatment of a condition called SIBO, small intestinal bowel overgrowth, and it is pervasive and insidious in the lives of so many of her patients. Today, we get into digestive functionality, and I tell you this up front because if you're listening to this over breakfast, you may want to reroute this to the afternoon. We're breaking down what is common, what is normal, some of the practices that you can engage in on a daily basis in order to accomplish ideal digestive health, and the influence that optimal digestive health has on things from autoimmune functionality to the overall health of your skin. This is a relevant podcast episode for anyone who has ever had a bowel movement. It is my pleasure to introduce you to Dr. Anita Davis.
Dr. Anita Davis, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast.
Thank you.
I am super excited to have you here to introduce you to this audience and to make some really big announcements with you on this podcast today. But first, can you tell people a little bit about who you are and how you got here and why you're a naturopathic doctor? And go.
Okay. How succinct can I be? I was telling you before that I've, since a child, wanted to be an astronaut. That's really what I wanted to be. And when I found out what you had to do to get there was be a doctor or a scientist or a pilot, I tried to like check off all the boxes. So I joined the Royal Canadian Air Cadets and I got my pilot's license really young. I tried to learn Russian one summer, which was really interesting, Zdrast. And then I also was really into science, okay? So like space sciences, biological sciences, and went to U of T for life sciences. The first biology class that we had was the first class in university I had was in Convocation Hall at U of T. And if you haven't been there, there's about like 2,000 seats. And there's maybe 800 students in this auditorium. And the professor asked, how many of you want to be doctors? And I think 80% of the people held up their hands. And it really, for some reason, really turned me off. It was like, really, we're not all going to make it. Are we all doing this for the right reason? That there's just so many of us. And I guess you always talk about rebel tendency. I guess that may be the cause of that. And I don't know. I still wanted to be a doctor, but I was like kind of put off by the popularity of it. And throughout my university like course choosing, I learned a lot about sustainable medicine. I took courses on international health, did some projects on pharmaceutical companies and did the determinants of health and the World Health Organization. And that really turned me on to how we deliver healthcare and how expensive it can be. And eventually I met a naturopathic doctor who introduced me to that concept.
Well, and I have shared this with you before, but I think that I think naturopathic medicine is where rebels go to flourish. Because when we look at a system and a system's not working, then those individuals who will have a tendency or who can easily see an alternative view are sort of appalled that we have a healthcare system that is incredibly expensive and highly reactionary. And yet no one is saying, let's treat the cause of the problem. Like, let's get upstream. Let's enable people to rise to the occasion and actually take control of their health. And I've spoken to some medical doctors who are like, oh, yeah, I know. I love what you're doing. It's just people aren't willing or aren't able to do that. And I was like, no, I think when their life is on the line, people are able and willing to do that. And
people are getting woke. they're like starting to, to realize this is the way it's going to go, because we need to be more upstream about our health. And there are ways to do this now. Like, I think we're just more accessible, like as naturopathic doctors and this privatized type of medicine. And what you're trying to do with your clinic and making it more accessible, like, I think this is going to be awesome, like, going forward.
Well, I just think it's about time for all of us. I think we all deserve better as individuals and as taxpayers, frankly, that we can go upstream and treat the cause of the problem. And in looking at the cause of the problem, as naturopathic doctors, we have a few things that we tend to look at, but one of them that we rely on and put a particular emphasis upon when we address the root cause is our digestive health. And I'm excited to have you here today to talk about that, because it's a topic that we have this sort of cursory involvement with on the podcast, and we kind of hit it in passing, but we've never gone deep on digestion.
I don't know
how that happened, but if you're at home and you're eating your bagel, then I suggest you hit pause and you listen to a different podcast and you listen to this one on the way home, because we're going to go there. We're gonna talk about poo. Right? So Canadian that we're going to apologize about it right up front. But I feel like we kind of need to. We need to talk about digestion, because we can't treat your skin or your autoimmune condition or your decreased immune functionality or your or whatever else unless we actually address digestion. So can you share with us, Dr. Davis, why we as NDs are so darn interested in this topic?
Why are we? It's so cool. It's just the one thing that people do every day is digest food, unless you're into fasting, you know, it's the one thing we can control. Like, my patients are literally making choices about the food they're eating at least 3 to 4 times a day. So let's start making good choices, and let's start working towards spiraling up our health. This is, I like the phrase that you use. And let's start educating there, because it is like the first step of the therapeutic order, right? To remove the obstacles to cure, and dealing with a base diet. So, I mean, we have to start there, and not only because, not the only reason, but the digestive system is, like you just hinted at, connected to every other system, let's say, like immunity, like your skin, your barrier function, your stress, your nervous system as well. And so can we just start talking about making good choices first?
And so on that spectrum of what, I hesitate to say it, but what is normal when it comes to digestion? Because I think one of the challenges that we face is, one, no one talks about it. It's not like we sit around on Saturday morning with our girlfriends while we're grabbing coffee and talking about what they are experiencing in the bathroom. I don't think people really know common versus normal. And I have a significant number of patients who've gone to see their medical doctor, and maybe they have 2 or 3 bowel movements a week, and their doctor's like, well, I guess that's normal for you. We have 3 concepts here, I think, is normal, common, and optimal. And so if we're talking just about normal, leaning towards optimal, how would you describe what someone's bowel movements and digestive symptoms should be like?
You know, who gets to choose what is like perfect? I don't like answering this question. You can tell.
Right? Just like moving on.
Chooses like where do we get our information from? Of like what's normal?
Just
really,
like, just anchor people somewhere so they're not like
sure.
20 bowel movements. Just commit.
You know, I just think as naturopaths, we like to see like 1 to 2 bowel movements per day. That is easy to pass. It's going to be sinking. It's going to be solid. It's not going to break up on the flesh. The color is generally light to dark brown. We don't like to see anything, floating. We don't like to see any white globs, oiliness. We don't like to see too much undigested, like regular undigested food. That being said, if you're like eating the perfect diet and like for you, and you are, you're not stressed out and you're like perfectly well and in balanced homeostasis. Every now and then, if you choose to do something that throws it off, I feel like that's also normal, right? If you choose to like binge at a Christmas party and you have symptoms afterwards, okay, that's normal. But as long as you can get back to homeostasis and it's not interfering with your everyday life or work, then I think that's fine.
Yeah, I think the concept of homeostasis that you bring up is so important because it's not about can you make your digestion perfect if you live in a bubble, but it's
exactly.
How resilient can you make your system?
Yes, I love that.
That's a super great concept. I'm so glad that you brought that up.
Because I joke about, like, can you go to India in an ashram and stay there for 3 months and eat, like a 3-ingredient Ayurvedic diet? Like, no, because we have jobs and families here. And we live in a world where we're exposed to different environmental pollutants and we can't live in a bubble. So it's like, well, how do we optimize our digestion for our lifestyle? And what's going to bother us on a daily basis that's going to interfere with our productivity?
Yeah, it's a great concept. But I think one of the challenges with that is when we say, well, does it bother you? There's a lot of people who would say, no, it's I'm fine. Fine is like if people who have listened to this before know that fine is like the lowest standard of health that I'm going to release you into the world with. But they will say, I'm fine. And then we take out wheat and dairy and eggs for 3 weeks and we try to reintroduce them. And they go, I was terrible. And I had no idea. And I think that's one of the challenges that we encounter as NDs is that people's set point is maybe a little bit different than our sense of optimal or fine.
Absolutely. And I can like think of a handful of cases right now where people have just been living with such severe digestive symptoms for so long that that's just their normal. And they're just running on automatic and nothing has made them go in to get help because they don't make time for it or nothing like they've created their own homeostasis. So as soon as they're like, they get thrown off by a diagnosis of an autoimmune condition or their skin starts flaring up and they're like, I can't do this anymore. Maybe they're getting married soon. Or maybe, that's the impetus to come in and be like, actually, I have like urging stools every morning and I can't almost make it on the subway to go to work. Maybe we should start dealing with that. Is that normal? I'll be like, no, that's not normal.
Right. But common, I treat a lot of Crohn's and colitis and, one of the common features amongst those patients is a long-standing history of bowel dysregulation where they go, oh yeah, I was constipated for 10 years as a kid, or I had had loose bowel movements for 4 years before I had that diagnosis. And there's, I walked by this, this clinic on the weekend and they had a sign in the window and it said, the 6 most dangerous words in your life. I thought it would go away. And I think that's one of those concepts with respect to digestion is that I think we think it's going to go away, or they go, oh, I think this is maybe normal, and it's not normal. And I think maybe even in this conversation that we're having, we could probably do a better job of starting to call out some of those in particular symptoms. And place them on a spectrum of normalcy. Yeah. So if you will indulge me, I want to play a game I've never played before on the Entrepology podcast. And this is called Digestive Rapid Fire, common versus normal. Now, Maybe okay, it's just fun for me, but
I can't commit to answers. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah. No, hey, no yeah, problem.
Fine. I'll do black and white answers. Fine.
Right. Simply because, and none of these things are black and white, but I think one of the challenges for people is we need to anchor them somewhere. So they have a sense of like, oh gosh, sure. I have had that symptom for a while. I should have that investigated. So first symptom for you, mm-hmm. bloating.
Nope. Not normal.
Common.
Very common. Oh yeah, common. Sorry, are the answers like normal?
No, you're correct. No, you're correct. No, you were doing it. Okay, you were doing it properly.
I mean, like, so I was just, there's a caveat, like if I'm like living my optimal lifestyle and I choose to have like overdo it on food one meal because it's like my favorite meal and I get bloated. I mean, I think that's normal to be bloated, but am I going to be, should I be experiencing bloating every day? And should it like make me feel uncomfortable when I go to work and kind of interrupt my flow? No, that's not normal.
Foul smelling gas, common or normal?
I don't find that's common, but it's definitely not normal. Ooh, no, that you should come in. Please come see me.
Right. If there is foul smelling gas, you've got, we'll call them bad bacteria that are probably not mm-hmm. breaking down food. And the question for us as Indies is why the heck are those bad bacteria wanting to hang out so badly?
Why are they there? And how long have you been having that? So that's also interesting.
Okay, we're going to talk about what some of the conditions are that are associated with that in a few minutes. Food in your stool.
Common, depending on the food, and sometimes normal, but sometimes not. So everybody knows the corn shows up in your stool. Like anything with cellulose in it and the fibers that are hard to digest, is fairly normal to see greens, but not too much. And like, a lot of the raw food vegetarian people will have more of this symptom, which I don't really like to see, but it depends on like how they're feeling and how they're bloating and if they're feeling pain in their stomach, that I will address that.
Food in your stool, but sinking stool, is that better in your books?
That's better, yeah.
Okay. And you talked before about floating stool. Can you just, if we go common versus normal, you're going to say...
Not normal.
Great. And can you explain why that is?
Yeah. Floating stool just means like principles of physics. There's air or fat is lighter than water. That will make your stool float. And why would there be air or fat in your stool? So air, I mean, I guess there's like some bacteria that can produce gas and make your stool gassy and, probably you have bloating associated with this. So I would be asking like, okay, so how bloated are you? Do your pants fit tight after certain trigger foods or certain meals? And for fat in your stool, I love to talk about the liver and the bile. And so like naturopaths like to diagnose a lot of bile insufficiency. So bile is produced by your liver to help digest and emulsify fats. So if you're having a lot of like large meaty meals or fatty meals, or like you go to the bar and eat some greasier foods and then have indigestion and floating stool afterwards, I would want to look at your liver and see like, are you making enough bile to like, how's your liver working? Is it working efficiently enough to digest your fats? And sometimes do you find that like people can't tolerate sometimes fish oils when they're bile insufficient? So like I get them off of the fish oil and get their liver kind of like resting before we do fatty acids even.
Yeah, absolutely. And those women who have and I'm going to call it out as women because it is much more common in women than men, but women with a propensity towards gallstones and family history of gallstones, I also see that those tend to be my estrogen dominant women. So lots of histories of estrogen dominance issues associated with that liver piece as well. See, it's all connected. This is why we're obsessed, guys.
And if you have any hormonal like imbalances, then we want to get your bowels moving properly because that's what's going to help bind the estrogen we want to get rid of through your bowels, right? So, I mean, that's like one of the, again, why we talk about digestion first if you come in with menstrual issues.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I use this analogy that so estrogen gets processed and it gets dumped into the bowel after it gets processed by the liver. But it's mm-hmm. like estrogen has this little flag that says I'm estrogen. And so if your bowels aren't moving quickly enough, the body looks at these little flagged estrogen bits and it's like, oh, estrogen. I need estrogen. I will take you back. And so we not only produce it, and we not only get it exogenously, unfortunately, from our foods and plastics and other things, but now we have a body that likes to recycle it when digestion isn't moving well. So it's, like we just can't treat hormones and leave digestion.
We need to eliminate. We need to eliminate efficiently.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's why we're talking about this.
Bowel movements every 2 to 3 days, common or normal?
That's common, and I would say normal for some people, but I would try to optimize that. It really depends on why the person's coming through my door, but I would optimize it.
Bowel movements only after coffee.
That's so interesting. I like this question a lot. Honestly, I would say that's okay. I mean, it's common. Here's my caveat now. If coffee is in your lifestyle and you can tolerate it well, like you don't have a propensity to anxiety or sympathetic dominance, like you're really geared up and your body doesn't have trouble relaxing and balancing that out. And your liver is working fine and you're like, coffee is how I do every morning. This is my routine. And you have a bowel movement after your coffee and that's how you do it. I don't think I want to budge your routine. Like, I don't want to throw you off. Because I feel like that's like you've adjusted to that level of homeostasis. I don't know if the old school naturopaths are going to be like, oh, that's not great. if you're relying on coffee, but I feel like if it's built into your lifestyle, I don't want to change anything that affects your whole lifestyle unless like your goal is to have a totally different lifestyle, like a year from now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I often will say to people, I just want them to be aware that coffee is not a source of fiber. So if it is able to trigger a bowel movement for you, it's probably because the coffee is also irritating that digestive system a little bit.
It's a bitter too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you can replace your coffee with gentian or bitters. And I mean, there's benefits greater than coffee, like to having gentian instead. And then you can do something else to have a little bit of like caffeine or awakeness for your job. I like that, awakeness. But,
it's a medical term.
If that's like, I don't like to change things too much. If people are like, this is a steady state for me and I'm optimizing everything else, or like we're addressing my autoimmune condition, but I guess it would depend.
I feel like there's people in the car right now who are like, you had me at coffee.
I don't like to tell people to get off their coffee, but you know what? I will if it's necessary.
If necessary. I totally hear you on that. When you have people coming in the door and again, we're talking about this common versus normal. What do you see? Do you see, usually people have normal digestion and you can just move on? Or do you find that most people actually have some element of digestive functionality that we can tweak that will have an impactful outcome for them with respect to their health? And I don't mean for this to be a leading question.
Yeah, no, I actually didn't see half and half. Like, I'm surprised actually that I see half and half. I think early on in practice, everybody like coming through the door had some element of digestive disturbance that we can optimize. And now I'm like, okay, well, people are like just maybe healthier I'm seeing a healthier population health informed population where their like diets are already kind of optimized. They're really well read. And they're like, listen, everything's fine there. Maybe we can tweak a few things, but they have other systems that are so out of whack that we prioritize first. But a lot, like the other half of the population, yeah, there's always some bloating, some food-related trigger to their skin, because I see a lot of skin stuff right now. Yeah, I would loop it into bloating, but some aspect of like patterning of I'm going to say IBS, but like alternating constipation, diarrhea. Like I see a lot of that because of my stressed out people that come see me. I like to see a lot of stress and treat that.
Yeah, and fair enough. And I think a lot of people are taking digestion into their own hands through fermented foods and a variety of things. And to that end, do you put everyone on a probiotic, and do you believe everyone should be on a probiotic? What's your approach to that as a common supplement?
Oh, I love this question so much because I have two different answers because I honestly
not to confuse everybody.
Oh gosh, I know, and I hate being. I hate being so blanket statement about things, but I realize that this is like in general we're speaking. So philosophically, I actually do believe that we all need probiotic, everybody. And this is because of like the clinical mentor that I've studied with and because of our standard North American diet, our environmental stressors, our stress itself and our not just and pollutants, but like the lifestyle we lead. And our propensity to medications, like our medication use. that the microbiome is just so out of whack. And I love like how finessed that the research is getting about this. And so I think, my kids and me, like we are all perpetually on certain strains of probiotics. But that being said, not all of my patients are on a probiotic because we're prioritizing different things and different symptoms.
Yeah, fair answer.
There's so many different strains too, and it gets so finessed. So I don't like to overcomplicate things and confuse people. So it's like more like, okay, the evidence-based information on certain strains are for certain conditions. And then other than that, there's like general maintenance, but then I'm really conscious of pill loading people. So if we're like really working hard on a hormonal issue, that's not a good example, on like a specific issue that's not digestive related, then I will not have them on a probiotic because they're on a bunch of stuff already.
Yeah. And sometimes we can oscillate in and out of those. And we were talking on Friday, I think one of the things that we agree on with respect to the probiotic piece is you can't just go to the health food store and grab the one that's on sale and be like, check, I'm on a probiotic. Because it really is much more sophisticated than that in terms of how it could be working for you on your behalf based on your health history.
It's gotten so confusing for people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's why we're here.
Yep.
There is a condition I want to introduce to people with respect to digestion that I think is really important for people to understand. I think there's a lot of individuals in our audience who have maybe received a diagnosis or a label at some point with their interaction with the medical system of IBS.
Yeah.
When, again, back to this concept of finesse, it could actually be something else. And that condition is SIBO. And I'm wondering, can you just tell people a little bit about what this is? Because I'm really looking for an opportunity for people here to identify with the description of the condition that you're talking about, and then for us to provide them with some solutions in terms of how we can investigate this for them.
Yeah, SIBO stands for small intestinal bowel overgrowth, and that's an overgrowth of incorrect or bad bacteria, we can call them bad, in the small intestines, so like that section of the gut between your stomach and your colon before everything exits your body, that's supposed to be kind of, right, relatively sterile, actually. There's not supposed to be a lot of bacteria there doing their work. The colon, however, has like relatively tons of bacteria, and their job is to, you know, help ferment the food, create certain fatty acids and markers to help health in other way, and certain vitamins they produce. But for a few different reasons, you can have an overgrowth or like a sweeping of this bacteria into the small intestine, and then you get crazy symptoms because these bacteria produce certain gases like hydrogen and methane. That can cause extreme distension and bloating, and irregular bowel habits. So like extreme or not extreme, actually, both actually, constipation, diarrhea, nausea, reflux, and an intolerance of certain foods that bacteria like to eat and will produce these gases in a higher amount. So like foods will trigger, this, but often this will be labeled with IBS. Often, not all the time, but and small intestinal bowel overgrowth can be associated with other type conditions as well, like rosacea or a history of concussion.
Yeah, so interesting. Like anything that will slow down that motility in the gut seems to predispose people for SIBO. Parkinson's disease is associated with SIBO, which is so interesting. Mm-hmm. And I know you certainly treat this and test for this more than I do. How do you treat it, and how do you test for it? Because it's not just based on symptoms that we would make a diagnosis of SIBO.
No, we kind of want to make sure that we have the right condition, because it gets, again, finessed at how we want to treat it. Because once you treat it, it's a really high likelihood of recurrence. So we really want to make sure we stop the recurrence from happening within the first year. And there's ways that we can help do that. So we want to really nail down the diagnosis. And that involves taking these like really tasty solutions. You'll get a kit and you will drink something that will make the bacteria party and go crazy and produce the gas. There's a bit of a prep diet beforehand. And once you take the solution, you then breathe into these lovely tubes. And so we're measuring gas production in the small intestine. It is so cool. I can't believe like that we can do this kind of stuff where the solution will get to the small intestine and that we'll measure like over time based on like travel time in your intestine, where even the bacteria is even like we can say, oh, it's at the end that you have the infection a little bit more, the overgrowth versus the beginning of your intestines. Anyway, we measure the gas and then it comes back as either like, yep, you're high producing. You have a lot of hydrogen production, which means like these bacteria like to produce hydrogen. And there is a protocol that we can use to help kill those hydrogen producing bacteria. If you have the methane ones, it's a little bit different, a little bit kind of the same, kind of different. We can be finessed about it, a little more finessed if we want to be. But we definitely have these different phases of treatment, which is going to be killing off of the infection using different herbs. Or if we have prescribing rights or go to see a gastroenterologist, antibiotics can also do the same thing. And we also want to work on the liver at the same time. So we want to make sure some of this liver support is to help bile and help things move along and help like just the gastro tissue as well. Just the health of it. We want to just increase the health of the digestion in general. So we do liver support for different reasons. Also to help you prevent, some people get these crazy reactions to the die-off of bacteria. We call it the Herxheimer reaction. And some people have, like, people who go on these detoxes have experienced, like, they know what we're talking about when we talk about you just feel crummy when you're killing off a lot of bad things in your body and your liver needs to process them and get them out. So we upregulate the liver enzymes. We deal with the biofilm because, like, this overgrowth can also, like, the bacteria are really smart and they produce biofilms, which is, like, kind of a barrier or shield to protect them from being killed off. So we have, which is amazing, natural, easy, cheap nutrients that can actually go and destroy the biofilm and get our treatments in there to work more efficiently, which is amazing. And then, like, which is what's really cool is, and based on lectures that I've been doing on this topic, learning that like we don't really need to do a crazy diet in the first few phases because we want these bacteria to be active and party. And eat the foods that you're feeding it so we can kill them. So the diet part comes later where we're just like, let's starve out the remnants of the bacteria and let's reseed you with like some good like probiotics, some good strains. And then we want to help the motility. So there's like all these pro-motility agents we can take in the later phases to help the bowels regulate, sweep everything out into the colon properly like it's supposed to and prevent a reinfection. And I love talking about the like motility part because we have this like really cool muscular layer on our intestines and they're innervated by this like awesome nervous system piece called the migrating motor complex. And it's like, oh, I can get so nerdy about it. But anyway, long story short, we have supplements like cheap, easy nutrient agents to actually promote motility and prevent recurrence, which is so cool.
Yeah, and that's what people want. They want to get rid of it. And I have found that by testing and treating SIBO in my practice, it's been a game changer for people. And it's definitely something that you are seeing more than I am. And we're going to tell people in a few minutes how they can get tested for SIBO if it's something that they're interested in doing. From just a lifestyle perspective, because I know there's some people who are like, I will not test. I don't want to take supplements. Like, what are a few just quick lifestyle things that people can do to support optimal digestion or stop doing to support optimal digestion?
Oh, yeah, no, I like this question. Okay, so one is just eat vegetables. Can we just eat vegetables, please? We're not eating enough vegetables, like as a whole, in North America. And I also subscribe to like this Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic perspective of like cooked vegetables too. And I love that fall is coming because now we can do easy like stews and soups and like slow cooker meals and instant pot meals that we don't have to spend a lot of time on cooking. But these cooked high fiber, high nutrient, like nutrient dense foods are going to be amazing for your digestion as like a basis of health for so many different reasons. So vegetables are one. And another thing I would say is deal with your stress and routine, which is easier said than done. But I feel like that's a huge piece for all my digestive patients is is if we don't address the nervous system and put ourselves in rest and digest mode, and if the body's not able to switch from like the sympathetic active fight or flight mode into rest and digest mode, like we need some sort of practice, optimally daily practice to just have our bodies practice to get into this mode so we can, you know, release enzymes to digest our food properly. That's really hard for our like power patients, right? The people who come to see us in our practice.
Totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Turning off is a huge challenge for
turning
them.
Turning it off. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw one thing in there for a third only because, well, I'm going to,
please do.
Is separate your drinking water from your meals. Mm-hmm. So as soon as you start to drink while you are eating, and I don't mean lubricating your throat, I mean like gulping water down the way it's served to us at meals, you're diluting all of those great digestive enzymes that you have available to you. And it makes it that much more difficult for your body to efficiently and effectively break down the food that you're giving it.
Mm-hmm. You need to, yeah, don't put out the fire that like digests everything, breaks it down.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anita, how would you define health?
Oh, health is homeostasis. I feel like you need to find a balance in like every aspect of your life. And so it's like spiritual, physical, mental. So important. It's more like aligned with this. My definition is totally like the World Health Organization. And like you have to be, you know, feeling safe in not just the absence of disease, clearly, right?
Absolutely.
On October 26th and 27th, we're doing something really special in Toronto. For those of you who have been hanging out on the Anthropology podcast for a period of time, you know that we are driven by the mission that when people are well, they can change the world. On October 26th and 27th, I'm going to be hosting an event in Toronto called Impact Lives. This event has been designed for clinician entrepreneurs and wellness entrepreneurs in general who want to learn how to amplify their business. We are bringing in keynote speakers from across North America and implementation session leaders to help you not only become more inspired with respect to your business, but to learn new skills that you can start to implement right away. Whether you want to launch your own podcast, write your first book proposal, or create a system for patient acquisition or new clients that takes your business to the whole new level, we have got your back. Impact Lives is a two-day event taking place at the Globe and Mail Center in downtown Toronto in a stunning venue that overlooks the city. It's going to bring together 150 passionate entrepreneurs looking to take the lives of their families, themselves, and the people that they work with to a whole new level. For those of you who have been loyal listeners, I would love to have you there. There is a coupon code that I am releasing just for listeners of the Anthropology podcast. That is Anthropology20. And if you go to impactlivesevent.com, you can use that coupon code to receive 20% off the ticket price for the event happening in October. I cannot wait to see action takers, go-getters, and anthropologists like yourselves there when we gather together for Impact Lives.
And what a perfect place to transition. I've got in the second half of the interview something that we call our key performance indicators or KPIs. So just like we would have these in our business, I think that we have them in our life and with our health as well. So if you're ready, I've got another rapid fire session for you.
Let's do it.
Okay. Do you have a consistent evening routine? And if so, can you share it?
I love that you said evening. Because you know that I'm a mom, right? And we have no morning routine when our kids wake up at 5 in the morning. Thank you. So definitely after the kids go to bed, which is, I mean, I have young children. So this is like constant like headache for me is like getting them to bed as early as possible so I can maximize my time. And it's been really late lately. So lately I've been trying to get rid of watching TV. No screen time, no me time in that respect. So what happens is I will listen to something. I'm like currently studying certain concepts in like leadership, business management, coaching. So I'll listen to that. Have a little snack because I probably didn't eat enough with the kids for dinner because I'm trying to feed them. And then I will also like read fiction, have a tea, make a task list for the next day, and try to go to bed on time.
All of that. A whole day's work after the kids go to bed. Fiction or nonfiction? You just alluded to this. What are you reading in particular right now?
Fiction. Because I'm trying to replace TV, right? So I'm something entertaining to like detach from the day. So I am reading the Outlander series, sweeping romance novels with historical elements. I'm not usually into romance. I'm like really into the sci-fi element of the series. But it's really great escapism.
You don't have to justify it. You can read all.
But it's great. I'm loving it so far.
It's perfect. What is the one thing you're most consistent with respect to your health?
Taking my supplements and listening to my naturopath. I'm not just saying that because, I just like take all her protocols without question now because it's just like, I don't have to think about it. It's awesome.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm. What is something totally badass about you that people would not otherwise know?
So I usually lead with the pilot thing, but we talked about that already. And I didn't know you wanted to be a fighter pilot too.
I did.
I didn't know that.
I did.
Yeah, that's so cool.
But I want to know what your badass. So yeah, you had your pilot's license at 17. I think that qualifies as totally badass.
There are some cool stories there. And yeah, it was awesome. That whole experience was awesome. I also like to like belt out to karaoke and like on my piano. There you go.
That's
a good stress reliever.
That's incredible and something I really will never do. what do you do for fun or play?
I honestly like play with my kids now. I like we go to the science center, honestly. We go to the science center and I love it. I love just like watching and teaching them science. I have fun during that and I play there.
Last question for you, entrepreneurism. Are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
I think it is both. I think there's people with certain tendencies that are really helpful to entrepreneurism. But that being said, it's so learned. Like you can do it. I want to tell the new grads that they can learn this because I'm a very reluctant entrepreneur and I had to really come into my own to be like, oh no, I actually do have the qualities of an entrepreneur and like jumping in and saying yes to opportunities and you have to like recognize what's going to in yourself, recognize those qualities in yourself that are going to work for you when you're starting your business and building your practice. So you're capable. I want to say it's learned as well, but people do have an advantage to be born with some of these qualities.
Yeah, a fair answer. And normally what I would ask you at this point is I would say, Dr. Davis, it's been amazing. People are going to want to follow up with you and learn more about what you're doing. And I am asking you that question, but I also feel like this is a really great opportunity to share that you are actually joining my practice. Yay! Big announcement! Dr. Anita Davis is she's a badass and she's amazing and she's intelligent and comprehensive and gets what it means to be a busy entrepreneur, which are some of the key features that we need over at my clinic, Anthropology Performance Labs. And so I'm really excited to welcome you to my practice. And I'm also just really excited at the transformation you're going to be able to bring to our patient population. So
I'm so thrilled and I'm like so I feel so humbled to be like a part of your team. I think we're going to do amazing things.
I feel like the
synergy that's happening right now, like and like everyone's on the same page and we're just going to be working towards like lifting these people up, lifting people up who just want to do great things. And I'm feeling this like super, super excited and powerful energy right now.
Well, I'm so excited that you feel that way. We had a really stellar team meeting on Friday, and we've got more announcements coming your way. It's incredible. I'm really excited to have you. And to that end, what we're going to include in our show notes is a link. If you are interested in booking a meet and greet session or coming to see Dr. Davis as a patient, learning more about SIBO, digestion, stress and anxiety, skin, these are all areas that she focuses on with particular competence, we will hook you up. The link is going to be found below. So thank you so much for being here today. I'm really excited to have you.
Thanks, Megan. Thanks so much.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Anthropology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.